Welcome to the Africa for Zero Waste podcast, where we engage in thought-provoking conversations about zero waste, featuring real stories from people implementing innovative solutions across Africa. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Andrea Dixon, the Gaia and BFFP Africa Plastic Programs Associate, and I will be your host today based in beautiful Cape Town, South Africa. This year is Gaia's 25th anniversary, and in light of this, we are going to be hosting monthly conversations with members of our movement to share their individual stories. In celebration of International Waste Pickers Day, which was observed on the 1st of March, and International Women's Rights Day, which was observed on the 8th of March, we will be dedicating this episode to celebrating women waste pickers in the zero waste movement. Today I'm interviewing the incredible powerhouse of a woman that is Maddie from the South African Waste Pickers Association. A warm welcome to you, Maddie, and a big thank you for traveling all the way from Paarl to join me in this conversation. How are you today?
Hi, Andrea. I'm good, thank you very much, and thank you for having me here.
Thank you so much, Maddie. I'm really looking forward to diving into your inspirational story today. So without further ado, let's kick things off with my first question to you. Can you tell us about where you grew up, about your family now, and how they would describe you?
Thank you, Andrea. I grew up in Eastern Cape. I'm a last born of 8 children, but now we are only 3 left, my brother and my sister. My family can describe me as someone who is strong, supportive, encouraging. Yes.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Can you tell me what your journey was to working as a waste picker and organizing yourselves as the South African Waste Picker Association?
I started working as a waste picker after I was being retrenched from the work that I was working. I used to work as a community facilitator at the organization called World Vision South Africa. When the office phased out, we were retrenched. Now, I had to make a means to look up after my family, as I had family to feed. Now, because of the information that I had about the recycling and grew passion on doing it, I started going to the waste sector. I organized women who were working individually there. Then we formed a cooperative. After forming this cooperative, we met one of the ladies who was already a member of SAUPA. Then she introduced us to SAUPA. That's how we joined SAUPA collectively.
Thank you so much, Maddie. And what's really standing out to me is you as women organized yourselves together, which is just incredibly inspiring for females everywhere. Could you please take me through a typical day in your life as a waste picker? And tell us about what time your day starts and ends.
My day normally starts as early as 5 a.m. The reason why I start that early is because we are the street waste pickers. Now, for us to get more valuable material, we need to wake up as early as we could to collect, so that when municipality comes to collect the waste, we already finished. Now, we start as early as 5 a.m. to go to the street and collect, and maybe to the households, and look for what is valuable for us. The typical day for us is maybe the month end, or maybe when people get, the grants, because those are the days where consumers buy and we know that a lot of material will be, available on the stream. Those are the days that we normally get more recyclable, more valuable work, for us.
Thank you so much, Maddie, and for taking us through a typical day. It was very interesting to learn the background, and I bet a lot of our listeners have not actually thought about what a waste picker does on a day-to-day basis and how early they have to wake up. Can you tell me about the obstacles waste pickers encounter in their work, and specifically the obstacles that women waste pickers encounter in South Africa and more broadly in Africa?
Thank you very much for the question, Andrea. As women waste picker, As I said, we wake up as early as 5 a.m. Sometimes it's not safe for me as a woman to walk on the street, especially in winter time, because in winter at 5 it's still dark outside and it's not safe. And if maybe you could be aware, there are a lot of people who are doing voice picking. Some are picking not because they are voice pickers, but there are some people who just want money out of voice. Now you'll find out that you meet them sometimes pulling your trolley and they will be violent, maybe take away what you have on your trolley. Some of the women will be even beaten because sometimes you won't agree easily to give what you worked for very hard. Now, it is not safe. That is one of the challenges that we face. Secondly, the challenge that we face is we don't have transportation to move our work from point A to point B. Now you'll have to pull the trolley from where you sort your material to the market, and it's not easy because sometimes the motorists they don't like us on the way with the trolley because they say we'll scratch their cars or maybe we'll cause the accident for us, and maybe they will swear for you to you, and then you know it's not a nice thing. Another challenge that we face at the market on its own, you'll find out that the prices are not stable. The prices are fluctuating. Today you come at the market, you sell PPE with 1.30 or maybe 3 rand for the kg. Then the following day you come hoping to get that 3 rand per kg, but you find out that the price is now dropped to 80 cents, and we don't know who controls the prices. We just go and sell and you find out the changes are there. That is the challenge for us, because you don't know even where to go and find out who is responsible. Is it the FFE? Is it maybe the industries? Is it the buyback centers? Or it's supposed to be us as we speakers who determine how much do I want to sell my products with. That is another challenge that we have. Maybe one of the challenges that maybe I can highlight is the stigmatization. You'll find out people think in our communities, those who are not aware maybe of the work that we're doing, the value of it, they think maybe we're doing it because we want to do drugs, or maybe we're already doing drugs. Some they think we're doing it because we sometimes disturbed in our mind. Most of people, they don't really consider we speaking as a work. They still stigmatize it. That's why we think we still need to share more information and teach our communities about what we're doing as women who are working in waste, because we do this to feed our families. We do this to make sure that we take care of our families. And if people would look at it, some of our children are diversities because of the work that we're doing. We can manage to feed them, we can manage to send them to school, we provide for our families. It's just that the mindset of the communities that we are staying in, they are not aware of what we're doing.
Thank you so much, Maddie, and I really appreciate you taking the time to like truly go into what the obstacles and challenges are for waste pickers, and specifically female waste pickers. And thank you for just sharing that story. I can imagine it must have been very hard to do so, but very important that we all do listen and take this on board. Could you please tell me about how joining the South African Waste Pickers Association has benefited your work? And can you also share with us what position you actually occupy currently?
Right now, I'm occupying the position of a deputy chairperson in SAUPA, which led me to occupy the position of a treasurer in the International Alliance of Waste Pickers globally. The work of SAUBA it really helped us and it benefited us because, as I said before, most people are not aware that way speaking is a work. But because we joined SAUBA, it gave us opportunity to teach other people in our communities that way speaking is a work that people can do. It's not because of people doing drugs, but because you can get some valuable material and sell and feed your family. SAUBA taught us how to organize ourselves from the ground, and then how can we share the information with the people that we stay with, from our families to the schools and to the community at large. For an example, today people know about the separation at source. They know that they can separate waste from the source, which means from their homes. They can take the biodegradable, which is the food pills, to the backyard garden and start planting the veggies, and then take the dry waste to the recycling. Now, most of people in nowadays, they do have backyard garden, the vegetable backyard garden, from the teachings that we taught them. And we managed to teach people about zero waste. Mostly people were thinking when we say zero waste, we mean no waste at all. But we were saying zero waste to the landfill. We don't need to see waste that is going to the landfill while there are people who can use the waste. Like, as I say, the food pills can make the biodegradable can make the decomposed. People can use it and dry waste can sell it and make a living out of it. Now, being part of SAUBA helped us to make sure that we teach people what we're doing, and then helping people to take care of environment, because it's not only about recycling, Andrea, but about the environment that we're staying in. People right now in these days, we're drowning in the waste. But for people to know that they need to take care of their environment, we need to teach them about what we're doing. And our stories need to be told by us. If we do have success stories, they will hear from us. That's what we learned from organizing in SAUBA.
Thank you so much, Maddie. And I actually just have such a smile on my face listening to you. Like, just all these activities you've done, and just a huge congratulations for the position you do hold. And like, they are very, very lucky to have you. But maybe briefly, you could just tell us a little bit about the important role that African waste pickers have been playing in addressing the global plastic pollution crisis through the recovery of recyclable materials.
Thank you very much, Andrea, for your question. For us as waste speakers, we're playing a big role, and we are proud of ourselves for the work that we're doing, because addressing a plastic globally, it's a good thing, an achievement, because the plastic is polluting everywhere. The waste is not only in South Africa, but it's everywhere, and all of us, we are drowning in the plastic. Now, addressing it, it's by telling the government and producers to take responsibility of their production. We might be working in waste, but we don't own waste. Waste is not ours. We work in waste to feed our family, to make a living out of it. But if the producers can learn that, for them to produce for circular economy, not to produce for linear production. Because as long as they produce something that is not going to circularity, it means we're still going to have a problem with plastic. I know that right now it might seem like a theory that will never be, happen. But if we can start now, changing the way that we do the production of plastic, it can help. Andrea, waste is like an open tap. An open tap that you don't close how are you going to stop it? You need to make sure that you come up with strategies on how to close this step so that you can remove this waste. But now that this step cannot be closed, we need to come up with the strategy to minimize it, to make sure that it doesn't come with that volume that it used to come with, but we need to come up with the strategies on how can we minimize it. That will help the plastic pollution crisis that we're in, because it's not only in the environment, but even in the marine life. There are fishes that eat plastics. In the human bodies, there is plastics that is being found. Now, that is a challenge. It's not the challenge only in the environment, but in humankind and in the marine life.
Thank you so much, Maddie, for sharing with us and just highlighting what an issue plastic pollution is worldwide and how waste pickers are at the forefront of leading the zero waste revolution to deal with it. So this ties us nicely into our next question, which is in the context of the ongoing global plastic treaty negotiations, which is a treaty that is set out to address the plastic crisis worldwide through a comprehensive life cycle approach. Could you please tell me your top priorities when advocating for a just transition and waste picker rights? How could the views and voices of waste pickers be better represented in the next round of negotiations at the INC 5.2 held this August?
Thank you very much, Andrea, for that question. Our demands on just transition, firstly, we want a mandatory just transition. Andrea, when we transit from the atmosphere, or let me say from a working condition that we are on now, where are we transiting to? We need to make sure that the transition that we get is just and inclusive, because you don't want anyone to be left out, but we want the just transition that includes everyone, that represents everyone, that includes all those waste pickers and workers in informal sectors, to make sure that our voices are being heard. We want governments and all the member states and all the civil society to work together and to amplify our voice to be heard. We are the one who are at the fence line, and we need our voice really to be heard and our demands to be taken care of. We don't say a plastic recycling will give the solution of everything, but we want when they come up with a legally binding resolution on plastic, they need to acknowledge that there are those people who are living on that sector, who are already working. When we start something as the global, we need to know that there is something that is already established, that is already working there. Now, how do we respect the expertise of waste pickers? How do we build on what they already do? Because waste pickers started in this sector before anyone can even recognize it or think about it. We were already there working. Now that the world is focusing on the plastic as the challenge, how do they make sure that there are alternatives to make sure that the lives of waste pickers are not affected? They don't misplace the waste pickers, but they make sure that they do come up with those resolutions that will be tangible and impact the life of waste pickers in a positive way. That's the just transition that we want. That is the plastic treaty that we're looking for, that will be mandatory and make sure that waste pickers keep on working, and those people who are producing plastic, they are the ones that need to take responsibility. We cannot take a fall, but we want to work together with everyone.
Thank you so much, Maddie. And what you're saying is so important. And I really appreciate how calmly and clearly you speak. But behind your words is the strength of a lioness ready to fight. So thank you so much for sharing that. I feel very inspired right now. So to move on our next section, which is related to your membership with Gaia Africa, could you tell us about when and how you first heard about Gaia Africa?
Thank you, Andrea. I firstly heard about Gaia in 2017 when I joined SAUPA. Gaia is working with SAUPA and groundwork on every event that they're doing. Now, that's how I knew about Gaia and how I knew about their work and the activity that they do in the community. I knew them because of joining SAUPA. They're working hand in hand.
Thank you so much, Madi. And to our next question, could you tell us a little bit about how being a part of Gaia over the past few years has supported the work you're doing now? And are there any noteworthy experiences that you can share with us when recalling working with the Gaia Africa team or interacting with members of Gaia Africa?
Thank you very much, Andrea. Working with Gaia made me to be aware that even though other people might say the incinerators are good for energy that will help the communities or the country, but it made me be aware that it's not like that. You know, the information that they have, Gaia has, they always share the information. We, as we speakers, we are at the ground roots. Sometimes we don't even know that we need to do the researches, we need to learn about things. We're just focusing on what we're doing. But we do have people like Gaia Africa, Gaia in South Africa, you know, those people whom, when they do have the information, they share with us, they teach us. We do have some workshops that we do with them where we learn more and much from them. Like, for instance, we once visited Tanzania with Gaia team, where I saw the waste speakers who are working with them there. There's an organization that they're working with, Nipefikio. And the way of working that Gaia has in Tanzania, it's not different from the way that we're working with Gaia in South Africa. That means their model of working is the same. They don't change from continent or from country to country, but they're working in the same way, which is really inspiring, because what we learn from Gaia here, you know that even if I can go to another country and meet Gaia staff, they will give me the same information. Their information is not contradicting, it's the same information. And we learned a lot from their researches, from the stories that they share. And most of the time, we do have a platform. They do give us platforms to share our stories, to tell about our challenges and our successes, to tell about how we feel about the work that we're doing. And their support behind us is so amazing. You know, it's really nice to work with them because you know that you have people who can support you. We do have some challenges, yes, I don't want to lie. It's not always like everything is perfect, but most of the time we're working quite well with them and they do support us very well.
Thank you so much for sharing that with Mari, and it's just amazing to be a part of the Gaia Africa team who do support you in the way they do.
Thank you.
If you could tell someone one reason, and I personally could think of several, so this might be a bit hard, but if you could just share one reason why someone should join Gaia as a member, what would it be? And feel free for it to be from the perspective of a female waste picker.
The reason, I think respect that they give to other people, that's the reason. Because if someone respects you for who you are, it's so wonderful. If someone accept you as you are. It's so wonderful. Andrea, you cannot meet me and hope me to change and be someone else. But I can recommend Gaia to someone, and reason would be you need to join Gaia as who you are. You don't need to change for everyone.
That is so beautiful. And it sounds like a very healthy relationship. Don't change who you are and accept them for who they are. I think we can all take that into our personal lives for sure. And then just as a bit of a more fun question, if you were an animal and if Gaia was an animal, what would you be? And what would you say Gaia would be? I'm putting you on the spot here. So say what comes to your mind.
What would I be? Let me say, what would Gaia be? Maybe a cat. Nice, soft, humble, but with those claws.
Like a hunter. I like that. I really like that.
Okay. For me, what kind of an animal I would be? Okay. A dove.
A dove.
Yes, a bird. It's not an animal, it's a bird. But I think a dove, with those eyes that are always looking and seeing far and humble.
Amazing. And a dove is also a symbol of peace, trying to bring peace upon your community.
Thank you.
That's amazing. I really love that. I'm impressed by how you thought of that on the spot. And now we have some more fun and personal questions. So I heard you have recently been in Tanzania and you're leaving soon for Indonesia. Can you share what these trips have been related to? What role you play in the International Alliance of Waste Pickers, which I think you have shared, but you could touch on again. And what has been your most memorable work trip abroad?
I've been in Tanzania. I'm going to Indonesia very soon, the next week. The work that we're doing, we are doing a mapping out of waste pickers. The reason why we are doing this mapping out in Africa, we found out in the plastic treaty that most of the member states, when you talk and engage with them, they will tell you that no, but we are not aware of the waste pickers in our places or in our countries. Now, we took an initiative to map out the waste pickers wherever they are, to make sure that when I come to you and say, but we have waste pickers in this area, when you say no, I can be able to say, but this is the context. You can communicate with them. Because now that we don't have those contacts, we cannot hold those member states accountable. They can slip away. Now, we decided, okay, it is our responsibility to map out the waste pickers wherever they are. The same thing that we're doing in Africa is being done in Pacific, in Asia Pacific, in Latin America, in Europe, in America, we are doing the same thing to make sure that we know all our members where they are. That's what we're doing. Even in Indonesia, we are invited to a conference by FIC, Secular Initiative. They have a conference that they invited us to as member of their committee, elected as the committee member on their structure. Now it will be the first time for me to engage with them in person, and I'm looking forward to it. That's what we were doing there. And, In International Alliance of Waste Pickers, I am working with them as a treasurer. I was elected as the treasurer of the International Alliance of Waste Pickers. My memorable trip actually is Argentina. In Argentina, it was very, very cold. And I catched a fever. You will be surprised why I say it's my memorable while I was sick. I was so sick and, being sick at that time. But it's the place where I found myself in the area where it's surprising. Everything that they consume is cold. Their water is terrible cold. When they eat, the food is cold. The water on the table is freezingly cold. They don't have tea. Sodas are cold. In the room, there's nothing hot. I was like, what kind of country is this? Because it's cold outside. It's freezingly cold, but everything is cold. Even the food. I was like, you know, I'll never forget this. I came there having fever, but I was like, you know, I enjoyed other trips. It was nice. But this one, it's memorable to me because it surprised me. Not because, okay, I can say I enjoy it more than others, but you learn different things when you travel. People from there, we were wearing warm jackets. We were keeping warm, and they will advise you, you need to keep warm, you need to keep warm. But when you look at them, they are with their vests and t-shirts. I was like, Aibo, what kind of country is this? But yeah, in a nutshell, I enjoyed it because I learned a lot from it.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. And thank you so much for being a part of these international spaces and bringing your insights from the ground, because it's absolutely invaluable. And yeah, it does take you away from your family. And I know you've recently become a grandmother of a new baby that your daughter gave birth to only 7 days ago while you were in Tanzania. And now you're off to Indonesia. So I know it's really hard to be away from the family. But yeah, the work that you're doing is, yeah, words can't even express how important it is. And thank you for sharing that story about Argentina. It's quite funny. I did ask what is the most memorable, not as one of the best. And I think we need to get you back to Argentina, because I've actually visited a couple times myself, and I went in summer and I felt like it was so hot and humid and I was sweating all the time and they were eating hot food from the fire. So I had completely the opposite experience from the opposite season, which is just hilarious. But yeah, these insights you gain while traveling would just like shape who you are as a person. So following the question about your most memorable work trip abroad, what has been the biggest challenge you've overcome in your life?
My biggest challenge that I overcame is losing the project that I started from the scratch. I thought I'll lose it. I thought I'll fall into depression. Have you ever saw yourself working hard, putting, you know, your soul and sweat to something, building it from the scratch and trying by all means to make it work, and, you know, taking time of your family, taking time of your own, you know, that you could have take rest and sit down, communicating with people, contacting people, saying that, okay, guys, I'm building this, I want your help. But when you lose it, it's like the turning of the candle. It's just, and it's gone. It was so challenging to me. It was so difficult to swallow it, but I had to grow up on it and learn from it, that the mistakes that I might be committed to it, being naive, trusting people more than what I was supposed to, sharing more than the information that I was supposed to share, you know, giving the trust to people, it came back and hit at me very hard. But it is the biggest challenge that I managed to overcome.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that with me, Maddie. And I can only imagine it was absolutely heartbreaking to go through that. And I personally believe it's going through huge failures in your life and then picking yourself up and starting again from scratch. Mm. That is the true mark of a person rather than immediate success. And I can truly see how it has shaped you as a person. And I'm really inspired to be in your presence. And we're going to move on to our final question, which is a fun one. If you could remove one type of single-use plastic, what would it be and why?
A lot of plastic that I can move.
All the plastic.
All the plastic that is non-recyclable. Oh. I could move. I don't think I could even choose one, but all the non-recyclable plastics, because our environment is at stake right now because of the plastic. All the toxicity that is in plastic in the landfill when people are working, the methane gases that they get there out of the plastic, that is the, you know, I just can't select and say this one, because they posing danger to our lives, all of them. Maybe if I can have, maybe I'm lacking the words to say it, but if I can answer by saying, removing all the toxic plastic on the, waste stream, that could be maybe what I can say.
Thank you so much, Maddie. That's a very diplomatic answer. And it reminds me, if you ask a mother who's her favorite child or grandparent who's their favorite grandchild, and they say no, all of them. And it's like, if you could remove one type of single use, what is the worst? And you say all of them. They're all the worst. So that is the best answer. Well done. So thank you so much for taking the time to come out to Cape Town today and engage in the stimulating conversation and sharing your personal experiences and anecdotes on being an African female waste picker. I hope you have a beautiful day ahead, and I look forward to us connecting again in the future. So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you, Maddie, for joining us, and thank you for listening to Africa for Zero Waste podcast. Be sure to come again next time.